And we're back on Fictional Frontiers. I'm your host, Sohei Bawan. Each week here on Fictional Frontiers, we try to cover the most noteworthy in genre entertainment, pop culture entertainment. And it's a very interesting time. Well, let me first of all apologize. I've been off the last 2 weeks, had some family emergencies to take care of, and thankfully, those family members have made their way through the fire of what they were going through, the gauntlet of fire, if you will. Thank God for that. And now we can take a pause, reflect on what's happened in pop culture for a bit. I was actually going to have James on last week. James Barnell, the founder of RealViews.net, the best online film critic in America, getting this all back rolling again. But then, like I said, these family emergencies kind of derailed everything, so to speak. And my apologies to James, my apologies to our audience who was expecting him to come back. But nonetheless, I'll do my best to kind of make my way through what's happening here in Hollywood and in television and film and comic books and all this stuff. There's so much happening in so many different ways and so many different mediums. The impact of not just awards ceremonies or shows, but technology itself. I think behind the scenes, even though we talk about award shows like the Academy Awards and how that's going to have an impact on the industry and the careers of so many people, we're still sleeping on AI. We're still sleeping on AI, and not enough has been discussed about the long-term impact, much less the short-term impact. There was an interesting development in the comic industry where Todd McFarlane had run a contest for a cover for one of his characters, and the winner of that contest, or one of the winners of that contest, used AI. Okay, and it was very interesting because that artist was called out, but rather than apologize or say, look, you know, I quote unquote cheated in using AI, the artist who, well, I'll use that term loosely, the artist basically ridiculed all the other traditional artists who were not keeping up, I guess, in his parlay, so to speak. He explained the prompts he used. He talked about how he was able to put this all together. And in essence, he mocked the people who were not embracing this technology, if you will. And I'm wondering whether or not that's just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, because as we move ahead, more and more companies, more and more people are going to be using AI. We saw Disney use it in the opening credits of Secret Invasion. They got a lot of criticism for that. And I think the real question is how much of it is going to be used behind the scenes without people being aware of it. I know in my son's high school, there have already been courses or classes, if you will, maybe not courses, but classes covering the dangers of AI or warning against the dangers of using AI as far as their academic careers are concerned, i.e. basically if you use AI, you're cheating. And there are ways to get around it. I know so many professionals are using AI for their letter writing, their submissions if they're physicians to insurance companies, attorneys even using it to help them with their briefs. And it seems like it's just a matter of time before this technology is going to be indirectly, if not directly, embraced by everyone to some degree. And then the question becomes, where does it stop and where is it going? And is this going to ultimately be a complete changing of the industry and changing what it means to be an artist and how one expresses oneself? Or is it going to be rejected? And is it going to be something that's, you know, kind of easily identifiable? Like, this is an AI generated piece and this is not an AI generated piece. And I have a friend of mine who periodically sends me samples, examples of how AI art is getting more and more refined and more developed. And at some point, when it comes to what you would call quote-unquote real images or images that appear to be real versus ones that are clearly illustrations, it will be very difficult to probably pick out what's real and what's not real. He actually sent me four images of individuals who were supposedly photographed, And he said, pick which one is the AI generated image. And I picked one, and in reality, they all were. And so where is that going to lead us? Now, as far as the writing, as far as the storytelling is concerned, the one thing about human development, expression, there's imperfection in that. And so you'll be able to appreciate that probably more. Question is, will the AI be able to mimic the imperfection? I guess is the real question. And as far as the long-term impact on the industry, in the short term, you're going to see artists really suffering, I think, once it's embraced. And there has been this back and forth among the guilds about what can and cannot be used. But at some point, the floodgates will probably be open. And like I said, even if it's not at the front of these efforts, people will be using it behind the scenes to refine what they're doing. And maybe that'll be beneficial for a lot of people. Like I said before, there are doctors and attorneys and other professionals who are already using it to make some of their more mundane tasks a little bit easier. I've dabbled in AI myself when it comes to writing, and obviously it's not there yet, but you give the AI, or the, and there are a lot, you know, there's so many different apps, there's so many different platforms out there that can help you with certain things, whether it's script writing, whether it's blog entries, whether it's social media posts, whether it's news announcements, outlining, whatever. You put it in there and you'll find some pretty impressive output. But at the end of the day, you still have to go back in there and edit and kind of tweak and fix things. And that's where we are. But will we be down that path, or will that path lead us that direction as we move ahead? That's a really good question. I do think that ultimately in the end, what this will lead to is the embracing of more in-person experiences, whether it's stage shows, whether it's live performances, sporting events in person. Talk to anyone. They love the unknown that comes with pulling the, I guess you could say, safety net away, you know, the tightrope walker without the harness or without the, you know, mesh net beneath him or her, right? That's what people enjoy, because there's something impressive about producing or doing something, pushing past the limits of human endurance or ability or what have you. And that's the same with art as well. I think to some degree that in-person experience will always be at the forefront. So maybe we'll start seeing more of an embrace of live performances. Gaming is probably another area, to be honest with you, where people are really going to be focusing so much on that, because there's nothing like competition. There's nothing like ego tripping and having that one-on-one experience. And you know, when it comes to the ego, most people like to feel like that they have, or they are at a level above someone else. So there's always going to be that there. So I'm wondering whether or not the technology will force people to embrace those mediums, but whether or not they will also force people to incorporate those maybe into the movie making experiences, what have you. There's a lot of different ways we could go, but the point of the matter is that at the end of the day, people are still sleeping on what this is. And I don't necessarily think it should be fully embraced, to be honest with you. I think there's a lot of dangers, and there's this notion that has been bandied about for a very long time, thanks to certain philosophers who have embraced this notion of progression being tied to the advancement of humanity, meaning progression or advancements in technology leading to a better life. And the reality of the matter is that that's not necessarily the case. As a matter of fact, most of the time, there's a cost that comes with that. And the cost oftentimes is not worth what you're getting. The price is too steep. The price is too high. Because when you have this advancement in one area, there is a regression in another area. And the perfect example of this is our connection to screens and mobile devices and our lack of connectivity with other human beings. We are becoming more and more distant from other human beings because we're all in our individual ecospheres, in our bubbles, which are obviously tied to technology. And so we don't know our neighbors. We don't go out and interact with people as much as we used to. Most people don't, and especially the younger people. They're just screen addicts. And so you could say, yeah, there's so much access to so much information, and we're all guilty of this. We're all connected to our screens, our mobile devices, because in essence, they're able to do so many different things. It's not just about reading news items or playing games. It's also about communication. It's about organization. It's about calendars, all these different things. The point of the matter is that we are all attached to these devices, and we are now becoming detached from our brothers and sisters in humanity. And I think that's one of the big reasons why, to a huge extent, we're seeing so many horrific things happening in the world today, where so many people, innocent people, are being slaughtered because we've lost this notion of what it means to be human. That may not be the primary cause of what's happening in different parts of the world, but it definitely sets the stage for that to possibly happen, right? Because if you don't know what it means to be human, and you don't respect human life, and you don't know what suffering is, then it's very easy to inflict that on other people. And I know there are a lot of people who say, oh, the gaming industry, you know, it doesn't really desensitize people. It's more or less just diversion and what have you. And if you look at the other countries around the world, they don't have the number of deaths from gun-related injuries that we have. But the reality of the matter is that still, it's very difficult to quantify or to evaluate how that impacts people's souls. And again, that's where we've had this philosophical shift where everything is so focused on the material, we don't look at the ephemeral, the unseen, the spiritual aspects of things. We only focus on what we can see and touch and feel. And if that can be faster, if that can be more advanced, if that can be smoother, if it can be more efficient, that's all that matters. But then if you look at so many different things, there's a cost with that. Last point about this, and I'll get to the Oscars in a moment. Just take a look at the quote-unquote mom-and-pop operations from back in the day. Or for that matter, look at the malls. The malls still exist, but they're definitely changing because most people, you know, purchase their needs or wants through Amazon or online. And then you have these mega corporations like Amazon who basically prevent the mom and pops or the individual businesses to thrive or even live. And so again, it's a squeezing of people in different ways, and it's forcing people to get away from that human connectivity. If you go to the malls, you would, you know, I remember back in the day, the place to go was the mall. You would walk around, you would see people milling about. Even if you don't talk to people, just the fact that you're connecting with people at some level makes a huge difference. And I know others would say, oh, there's different things that people are doing. They're still going to dinner, they still have to eat together. Although if you look at what they're trying to do with AI and some of the fast food restaurants, they're actually trying to utilize AI in the placing of orders so that you have no connection with people. And as a matter of fact, I would argue, obviously there's a commercial reason behind that because they don't want to pay the 9-to-5 workers, but we're all guilty of the self-checkout line. And we like it because, you know, it's something that it's a little bit faster. We don't have to wait. It speeds things along. But the reality of the matter is the reason they did that was because they were trying to save money. But the impact is that you don't have that interaction. You have people who, especially young people, who are not socially in line or adjusted enough, I should say, or experienced enough in interacting with different types of people. I remember some of my wife's family members, they owned a convenience store, and I would visit from time to time, and just talking to the different people for just a brief moment, or seeing different people for a brief moment, made you realize the world was much bigger than what you thought it was. And it actually put a human face on so many people who were just numbers or statistics or not even that. And so all of these things come into play, and AI is another example of that. I mean, the streaming platforms did a number two. They did a pretty good job on disconnecting us from the movie going experience. However, we're seeing an uptick in certain things. So I think ultimately in the end, even from a commercial perspective, you're not just looking at things from a pragmatic social construct perspective. The next wave, or there is an opportunity there, the next wave of opportunity is going to be tied to reconnecting us with other people, those experienced in some way, form, or fashion. And it may take some time to get it going, but there's a reason why psychologists and therapists, their businesses are booming. They're at an all-time high as far as their businesses are concerned. They don't have to do advertising. One other point about that, there's a colleague of mine who was talking about doing advertising for different industries. He focuses on video advertising. He focuses on digital thumbnails and all this kind of stuff, basically for social media. And he approached a lot of physicians about doing this for them, and he has done work for them. The one group who really doesn't need that, who said, thank you, but no thank you, was the mental health industry. Psychiatrists, psychologists, he said, look, we don't need this because we don't even have enough time to see the people who are coming in. And this has been the case even before COVID, but now it's even more pronounced. People are depressed. They don't know how to interact with the people. And a lot of times people just want someone to talk to. Honestly, they just need someone to hear them. And that's what's been missing from so many of our endeavors because of the ubiquity of certain technologies. And AI, again, just because something looks shiny, just because it looks impressive, doesn't mean it has that human character in it, so to speak. So Hollywood, they're kind of ignoring some of that, but at the end of the day, it is what it is, as they say. I hate that phrase, but the reality is that until we as a society are willing to kind of put on the brakes or pump the brakes, we're not going to see much change there. And whenever there's money involved, and that's why when it comes to Hollywood and some of the things happening there, as far as behind the scenes stuff and AI and who they hire and who they don't hire, it's always going to come down to bottom line. So speaking of and about the Academy Awards, we saw Christopher Nolan finally got his Academy Award for Best Director. He was finally recognized for Oppenheimer. And again, you can make the argument that that was more of a career Oscar than just this film. For me personally, I think there were some very unnecessary scenes in the film. The nude scenes were completely unnecessary. They added nothing to the movie, added nothing to the story, and they were very odd and clunky. And I'm of the belief that there do not need to be any of those types of scenes in movies at all. That there are certain things, certain interactions between human beings that should be never shown, and they should remain intimate. And when you display those or reveal those to the public at large, it takes away the specialness of the private interaction, if you will. That it basically takes away the special, intimate, very, I guess you could say, lovely aspect of those relationships, which are a part and parcel of human existence. And that's something that should be shared, not openly, but privately. They should experienced privately, not openly. And those scenes in that movie did nothing for the movie at all. Nothing. I don't know why he added those in there. For me, I thought if you take those scenes away, that was, for me, the most impressive film of the year outside those scenes. Those scenes really were so unnecessary that kind of left a bitter taste in my mouth, to be honest with you. But point of the matter is that Christopher Nolan is probably the most impressive director working today when it comes to original content, when it comes to expanding the storytelling landscape. There are people who say, we've seen this before, we've seen that before. Not really. He really does put unique spins on tropes that we may have seen before, and he does pose challenging questions in his films, and there is a very strong emotional underbelly to all of his work, whether people believe it or not. To this day, Interstellar is still one of the most powerful movies I've ever seen. It's one of the most impressive films I've ever seen, and the emotion of that film is what makes it work. Yes, the scope and scale highlights that, but again, going back to mirroring reality, Interstellar at its core is about a father trying to save his children. And the sacrifices that are made by parents is what it really comes down to, and that bond that's created through love. And the scope and scale is to really, I guess you could say, emphasize or highlight the magnitude of that relationship. Because when the stakes are so heavy and so high, and they're presented in a way that really, really hits your heart, then you appreciate that relationship even more. So that's why Interstellar works. And I think the movie Oppenheimer, you know, the way I look at it is that it's a film about, again, what we were talking about earlier with the AI. You know, that certain things should not be posed, certain things should not be asked, and there are certain things that should be left as is. You know, I'm of the belief that the Creator has created a balance in the world, and there are certain areas, or a lot of areas actually, that should remain untouched by human hands. And when we attempt to control those areas, or we mess with that balance, there's an Arabic word, mizan, which means balance. When that balance is unsettled, it has catastrophic results. There's a real price that's paid. And oftentimes the reason we do what we do is because of ego. And that's what I think that movie was really about. It was about ego. It was about Oppenheimer and Strauss and their egos, and how their egos color, or could color, their way of looking at the world. And both of the characters in that film, real life characters, it led to regret. It led to defeat. It led to a misunderstanding of one's place in the world. And I think that's what that movie really kind of summed up very well, if you want to talk about what the movie was about. Cillian Murphy won for Best Actor. You know, very, very strong performance in that film. He's been a very strong actor for many a year. And, you know, the competition, as is always the case with the award season, it ends up at one place, right? People kind of get on a roll, and then basically it ends up being where it is, right? You know, like I said before, the critics don't want to be the outlier, so they're going to go along with the favorite or the leader most of the time. And Cillian Murphy had established himself through all the award season's awards, and so it was pretty much a done deal. Robert Downey Jr. finally got his Oscar, and I thought he was extremely, very good in this film, excellent in this film, but I think a lot of it also was because of his career and where he's come from. It was honoring all of that. So for me, those are the big three awards I think that deserved a lot of accolades. I don't want to say recognition, accolades, but if you want to know or focus on what's noteworthy about the Oscars, that was it. The other thing that really kind of surprised a lot of people was Miyazaki winning for The Boy and the Heron. But Miyazaki, again, I think there's a lot going on with that award. I think it's an embrace of a legend in the industry. I think it's a recognition of his unique storytelling style, but I also think it's a rebuke of things going too fast, because it's a throwback. It was a throwback film in many ways to what animation used to be. So I think there was a message there as well. The other Oscar that was very interesting was Godzilla Minus One winning for Best Visual Effects. And the only reason I point that out as we head out in a couple minutes is not because Godzilla won. No, there have been so many strange winners and losers at the Academy Awards. One of the biggest omissions in the history of the Oscars to this day is Tron Legacy not winning an Oscar for visual effects. I don't even know if it, I have to go back and look at it, but I don't even know if it got a nomination for visual effects. And it was because of, I guess, people's thought process that the Jeff Bridges CG face, whatever, wasn't up to par. But really, in the context of that world, it makes sense. But you go back now and you watch that film, It's one of the most impressive visual films of all time, still to this day. And that was, I think, 2010. So that was 14 years ago. And that's why that franchise is still alive. I mean, Disney just opened up another roller coaster that's based on that film in Orlando. And the new Tron film, Tron Ares, is coming out next year. And so obviously there's something there. But I think what that win by the people behind Godzilla indicates and shows is something that I've talked about for a very long time. That's what I really want to focus on, is that the playing field, the landscape of filmmaking when it comes to the quality of technique and production and output is not under the exclusive domain or dominion of North America or Europe. And as a matter of fact, so much of the best filmmaking, as far as, when I say best, I mean the most technically impressive. Again, I don't want to say best as far as story and all that. I'm not getting into that. I'm just talking about the technical prowess. There's nothing that Korean filmmakers, Japanese filmmakers, Turkish filmmakers, they are nowhere nearly, they're not a league below what's happening here. As a matter of fact, I would argue that many of them are more skilled and are using the technology in more exciting ways than what we're seeing here in the States, which is why you have these big budget films from Marvel. Disney lost $1.5 billion last year. Part of that was because spectacle does not equate with something that's going to be embraced by the masses as something unique and impressive to see. And so I think that from time to time, you see the people who are in these respective industries recognizing that that is the case. So it wasn't, I think, just throwing a bone to an international production. I think it was a recognition, reluctantly maybe by some in some quarters, but it was a recognition that the domination of the technical prowess, or the technical prowess that we see, or the ability to make the best fare, quote unquote, as far as the quality of the work, not necessarily the storytelling, but just the quality of production, is not under the unique auspices or the under the complete control of North American Europe. And you know, it's a good thing for all of us because it forces us to up our game. Just like in the NBA, when you've got Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic setting the pace in the NBA as far as players are concerned, rather than say, okay, why are we having these European players dominate and let's not, you know, let them play X, Y, Z. No one's saying that, but it's forcing NBA guys to up their game, and that's great for them, and it's great for all the industries. You want to have competition because we'll all get better by it. You're listening to Fictional Frontiers. We'll catch you next week. Hopefully James will be back.